Hello and welcome to the Climate Clinic, a podcast brought to you by the Global Consortium on Climate and Health Education. My name is Adesh Sundaresan, and I'm a doctor from University College London. In this series, Be the Expert, I'll be joined weekly by my co-host, Dr. Mark Futenik, an emergency physician from Los Angeles. Each week, Mark and I will bring you the latest headlines from climate and health research from the leading evidence-based journals from around the world. Tune in to learn about the health implications of climate change, how this is affecting us today, and what needs to be done. By the end of it, you'll know all you need to know in order to be the expert. Welcome back to episode 10 of Be the Expert with myself, Adesh Sundaresan, where I'm joined in the studio today with a guest host, Dr. Preethi Juggi. Preethi, great to have you today on the show to discuss the paper. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. I am an infectious disease specialist, a pediatric infectious disease specialist at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. I also direct the antimicrobial stewardship program for the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. And I've become really interested in how climate affects the children that I care for every day.
Well, it's wonderful to be sharing the studio with you. I'm really excited to be benefiting from your expertise today. And I'm sure the listeners are looking forward to hearing about today's topic. So tell us a little bit about what we'll be talking about today, Preethi.
So the topic today is a broad look at climate change and how it impacts pediatric patients. We will be exploring this using a great review article that was published in The Lancet Planetary Health in March 2021, entitled Climate Change and Child Health, a Scoping Review and Expanded Conceptual Framework. And for those of us who practice in higher income countries, it's important to remember that this article focuses a lot on developing nations, but that climate change really, really affects people all over the world, including in developed countries.
So Preethi, we know that there's a growing body of evidence to suggest that climate change negatively affects child health through various pathways. And the authors in this study conducted basically a literature search on the impacts of climate change on pediatric health from 2000 to 2019. So basically a two-decade period. The studies they included in their analysis were those that explicitly linked an alteration of an exposure to a risk factor for child health to climate change or climate variability. And they ended up reviewing 370-odd documents after applying their search and inclusion criteria. And before we delve into their findings, I also want to point out that the largest proportion of single country studies that made their final cut of these 370 papers were from high income countries, so about over 40% of these solo country studies, and only 12% came from lower income countries, which were mostly Africa and Asia.
Adesh, I understand that Mark and yourself are in the habit of describing figures that your listeners can't see. Well, it's my turn now. Figure 3 in this article is a nice diagram to demonstrate how climate change might affect child health. They show how climate drivers such as extreme weather, altered rainfall, raised temperature, sea level rise, and ocean acidification have both direct effects such as temperature change, precipitation and floods, and droughts, and indirect effects such as ecosystem disruption, changing vector patterns, air pollution, and aeroallergens on child health. They also delineate a few risk factors that amplify or increase the likelihood of negative health effects from these climate drivers, including food insecurity and malnutrition, educational attainment, forced migration, toxicant exposure, and importantly for children, in utero exposure. They interestingly also draw dashed lines to demonstrate where in the flow chart that adaptation and mitigation could hinder the effects of climate on child well-being.
I really like this figure, Preethi. It's kind of maps out the process through which direct and indirect climate drivers can affect pediatric health. And as you also mentioned, they also cover some of these risk factors that amplify or increase the likelihood of these negative health outcomes for our children. Let's firstly talk about some of the direct effects of climate drivers on child health that you'd mentioned. To recap, these can take the form of changing weather patterns, such as rapid and delayed onset extreme weather events. The authors explains that temperature changes can affect child health. So heat waves, we know, increase overall mortality rates within a population. And multiple studies in low-income and middle-income settings have quantified the detrimental effects of heat waves on child mortality rates, with some minor exceptions to this observed association. So direct morbidity from heat waves include heat strokes, electrolyte imbalance, so acute heat-related illnesses, kidney-associated diseases, and respiratory and infectious diseases, whereas increases in mean temperature are associated with a higher prevalence of pediatric kidney stones and Kawasaki disease, for those listeners who aren't familiar, is a form of vasculitis that tends to affect children more than other demographics. ED visits also increase for children living in cities. And on the other extremes for temperature, when we're talking about extreme cold, these cold temperatures also cause greater mortality and have been shown in studies in Spain and China to cause greater mortality as well. And rapid fluctuations in humidity and temperature can significantly affect pediatric respiratory health and infectious disease rates.
Yes, I'm very interested in infectious diseases in children, as that is my area of specialty. Continuing with the direct effects, they go on to highlight the risk of child health from rapid onset storms and heavy rainfall, which both compound the risk of flooding. The health risks include the obvious, including drowning and injury, as well as longer term impacts from lack of proper nutrition, and importantly, the spread of infectious diseases, such as vector-borne diseases, waterborne diseases, and foodborne diseases. Finally, they talk about the impact of drought and wildfires. Droughts tend to have a longer onset and duration than other climate drivers and put a strain on basic water needs for families in rural settings. Droughts and associated wildfires also worsen respiratory health, mental health, nutrition, and infectious diseases among the pediatric population. It is worth noting that despite potential adaptation strategies, droughts undermine local ecosystems, and this drives families into poverty and can force migration.
Those are great points, Preeti. The authors then come onto the indirect effects of climate change on child health. Firstly, they look at, they explore changing vector patterns in infectious diseases. We've seen from recent studies that we've highlighted on other episodes of Be the Expert that over half of all known infectious diseases that affect human beings are being worsened or driven by climate drivers. Infectious diseases also seem to take a disproportionately high toll on children in general, and particularly socioeconomically vulnerable children. They dive into a few important examples, and I'll headline some of these now, starting with malaria. So in Uganda, short-term weather trend changes, likely due to climate change, lead to higher temperatures and increased rates of flooding, and these in turn cause more favorable conditions for malaria transmission and hamper vector control efforts too. Similar studies and results have also been found in Mali and Zambia as well. So if we generalize the net effect of climate change, intensified malaria transmission across the whole of sub-Saharan Africa could increase malaria-related mortality in the under five categories by about 10 to 15% if no measures are taken to mitigate or adapt to climate change. And that's quite a significant amount. Similarly, with Borrelia burgdorferi bacteria, which is known to cause Lyme disease, the life cycles of ticks and the bacteria, so the vector host and the bacteria itself, the pathogen, are both dependent on temperature and humidity, amongst other factors. And we know that children are often at the greatest risk from Lyme disease.
Wow, it's very interesting just to see how things are so linked to each other. One thing leads to another and affects so much in children. The authors also briefly explore the links between climate change and diarrheal disease in children, which is an important cause of morbidity and mortality. Rural areas experiencing lower amounts of rainfall suffer from higher diarrhea incidents among children due to the use of unsafe drinking sources and limited hygiene. Conversely, higher precipitation levels in urban areas, both in low-income and high-income settings, might increase diarrheal incidents due to suboptimal water and sanitation systems. A warmer and drier climate under business as usual could increase the intensity of rainfall in countries such as Botswana, South Africa, Senegal, Rwanda, and Ethiopia, possibly leading to changes in patterns of childhood diarrhea prevalence, underscoring the need for effective water and sanitation systems. Studies from India show that the rainfall is associated with an increased prevalence of childhood diarrhea. Extrapolating past changes in climate could mean a 13% increase in childhood diarrhea incidence rates in the northern states by 2040. Increasing numbers of heavy rainfall and floods in Cambodia and China show that these events put children at risk for diarrhea. And evidence from other Asian countries emphasizes that temperature is the most important weather variable associated with diarrhea, although this differed between geographic areas. And finally, an example from the infectious disease section is that of hand, foot, and mouth disease, which is caused by enterovirus that primarily infects children. And the prevalence of hand, foot, and mouth disease has increased in Southeast Asia. Zhao and colleagues have projected that the incidence of hand, foot, and mouth disease could increase by 3 to 5% by the end of the century in China. But the main impact would be a change in which urban areas would be prone to hand, foot, and mouth disease outbreaks.
Moving on to air pollution and aeroallergens. So both of these also pose a great threat to child health globally. Exposure to particulate matter adversely affects lung function in children. It can result in a decreased peak expiratory flow and forced expiratory volumes, particularly for children with background or pre-existing respiratory conditions such as asthma. And in turn, as you can imagine, this leads to an increased number of ED visits, A&E visits, hospital admissions, and deaths in children as well. With increasing mean temperatures, constant emissions of precursor chemicals, and no changes in cloud cover alongside that, we're expecting to see ozone concentrations to increase significantly, especially in urban settings. The extent, of course, would depend on local climatic variables as well. So these high concentrations of ozone are likely to exacerbate respiratory disorders, including asthma, other conditions like atopic dermatitis and allergic conjunctivitis as well. In South Korea, ozone pollution is projected to cause the majority of the burden of disease from climate change on children younger than 15 years during this coming century. Other pollutants from fossil fuel burning can also have clear impacts, both short-term and long-term, on child health, especially for those with pre-existing respiratory ailments. Finally, the authors touch on an interesting point in that the rising carbon dioxide concentrations itself via increasing the mean temperature, greater precipitation, and intensified and longer pollen seasons can also affect the severity of allergic rhinitis, allergic conjunctivitis, and atopic dermatitis and asthma. You know, the stats are showing across the world that we're coming up to, in high-income countries like the US or the UK, somewhere between, you know, 40-50% of our pediatric population suffer from some sort of allergy. In a study by Newman and colleagues, they projected that the emergency department visits from asthma caused by aeroallergens could increase by 14% in the US over the course of the century under a business as usual scenario due to just longer pollen seasons. Additionally, warmer and more humid weather might increase the risk of fungal spore production as well, indoor mold growth, insect and contact allergies too. Preeti, moving on, what were their findings on pediatric mental health in this review?
So there wasn't a huge amount of research on climate change and mental health amongst children, but I know that you have covered this on a previous episode on the mental health impacts, with a significant number of children indicating that they are concerned about climate change. Studies looking at the effect of drought and higher temperatures on adolescent mental health in Australia and the US show an overall worse mental health with overall higher levels of emotional and physiological distress. It has also been suggested that the effects of climate change may have long-term behavioral effects. I think it's important for us in higher income countries to realize that climate change does not only affect lower income countries, but children all over the world.
Coming to the last part of their review, the authors looked at some key determinants of general child health and well-being and how these direct and indirect climate drivers affect them. So Preeti, let's start off by telling our listeners a little bit about their findings around malnutrition and food insecurity.
So the authors remind us that malnutrition is one of the leading factors contributing to child mortality and morbidity globally. The majority of studies they found indicate the potential gains in crop yields from higher average temperatures and carbon dioxide concentrations would be offset by negative effects in the form of heat waves, lower water availability, changes in the dynamics of crop diseases, and lower nutritional values of the crops that they grow. For example, this could be a lower concentration of iron in foods. Extreme weather events such as flooding have long-term effects on the nutrition status of children, with the most disadvantaged children being at greatest risk. A number of studies modeled changes in temperature and precipitation due to climate change based on business as usual scenarios, which is no action, over the coming decades, and projected that sub-Saharan Africa could face increased rates of stunting of up to 20%, depending on the rate of socioeconomic development, but that this would vary substantially within countries. In terms of solutions to tackle this crisis, crop diversification has been identified as a possible adaptation measure in combating child undernutrition. It is worth mentioning that another issue is that of overnutrition, the product of unhealthy diets and decreased activity, particularly in the built environment. The authors explain that overnutrition, undernutrition, and climate change seem to have a common set of causes requiring a systematic approach to finding and implementing solutions. Finally, the authors considered the impact of in utero exposure to these direct and indirect climate drivers on child health. This is going to affect children even before they're born. The effects of climate change on pregnant mothers are beginning to be understood, with studies focusing on the intersection between maternal and child health with regards to climate change. So extreme temperatures, water scarcity, they've all been shown to increase the risk of preterm births. And others, such as air pollution, have led to lower birth weight and affected length at birth, which has detrimental consequences for the neonate. Some studies also suggest that higher average temperatures increase the prevalence of birth defects. There are also some indications that increased in utero exposure to particulate matter and other air pollutants could have physical, cognitive, and behavioral effects on the child later in life. For example, early evidence showed that high temperature exposure in utero led to a small reduction in adult wages in the U.S. So this is going to put children at a disadvantage even before they are born.
Preeti, let's quickly review this article that we've talked about today. It's quite a meaty one, isn't it? There's a lot of content, a lot of material in there, and it's a very high level overview. And you can tell that they've really synthesized and brought together, you know, 370 articles in their literature search here to form their conclusions in their sections. But I think it's a really important article and one which really highlights the breadth of issues that children are facing around the world as a consequence of climate change.
Yes, I am reminded of this quote from John Muir that is, when we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe. And I kind of think about this like that quote, that climate change affects children in such a profound way and in so many varied ways that it is really, really important for us to consider decreasing emissions as healthcare workers to really improve their chances at living a high quality life.
Absolutely, Preeti. Thank you so much for joining us today on the show, and we'll look forward to welcoming you back soon for another episode.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time for the next episode of Be The Expert.